Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. This is Sheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find me at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Sheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on Twitter at @halfwall_hockey and on my website, half-wallhockey.com, also at San Jose Hockey Now. It is the beginning of the hockey season. It is like Christmas for all hockey fans. And we have some opening night rosters talk. We have Couture news, as well as some other ramblings to go on about the
Sharks.
Well,
the big thing, though, that we're going to hit this week, though, is we're going to make and we want to make sure that we record this before the opening night so that this can be recorded for posterity and you guys can laugh at us at how stupid we are. we're going to make our bold predictions. So both Keegan and I, we're going to have 5 bold predictions each and a bonus one, too. So that's 12 bold predictions for the price of one podcast.
If you've listened to another Sharks podcast, we're taking these things and we're writing them in blood, and in 5 years from now, people are going to remember these bold predictions.
I hope not, because I'm going to be probably wrong on all of them. So
yeah, that's true. But it'll be a lot of fun, I think. Some of them might come true, maybe.
Yeah.
Some are more bold than others, I'll say that.
Yeah, and some of these things are more, and for mine at least, I'll tell you where my thinking is. Some of them are kind of more fill things. Some of them are kind of educated guesses.
Sure.
All of them, though, I can be wrong on. Very wrong on. So.
Me too. But it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, Chang. So let's start with the biggest news, I guess, the opening night roster, or like what we think might happen on opening night. The Sharks have been putting out some lines at practice, or you have, for the Sharks.
Sure.
Who do you think right now, Sheng, is going to be in our opening night?
Well, I think, you guys have all seen the roster, so we don't have to rehash everybody that's on it. I want to give Keegan and I some credit. Our predictions, I think we're pretty close to true, except for Thrun being in, just because they were able to kind of hide more guys on IR. So sneaky of the Sharks.
They pulled the double whammy on us.
Yeah.
They brought Thrun back up after. That was pretty interesting.
But in terms of how I think they're going to start, I think that there is some question in terms of they have 13 forwards, and on their fourth line, the last 4 days, they've been running the same 4 players, but of course the line is 3 players, so one of them is going to sit. Sturm at center, who is a lock, he's going to be there tomorrow night and for the early part of the season, unless he's hurt. But then, though, you have 3 wingers that I think will mix up, and it's Giovanni Smith, Fabian Zetterlin, and Kevin LeBanc. And so I think the question is what they feel like they need that night, who's kind of playing better, right? So I think that it's possible for LeBanc to sit out opening night. He hasn't been on the power play the last couple of days, and that's usually a telltale sign, because a power play is such a specialized drill that if you're kind of not on it, then, it's sort of – because the team's not going to waste a practice spot in a specialized drill on somebody who they think may not play. I'm not saying it's a guarantee he's not going to play, but it is noteworthy that a guy like LeBanc, who, makes his bones on a power play, hasn't been on it the last couple of days, as opposed to Henry Thrun. Henry Thrun has been on the power play the last couple of days, and he's also paired with a veteran defenseman in Jan Ruda that I don't really foresee the Sharks scratching, especially early in the season. So, so I think Thrun and Ruda are in. The lines that I've seen, I think it will hold tomorrow. Of course, they can be jumped. They can be mixed up by the second period. But it's Hurdle with Zadina and Hoffman.
Sure.
Granlund centering Eklund and Kunin. Bortolo centering... Barabanov Duclair. Yeah, sorry about that. Barabanov Duclair. And like I mentioned, Sturm centering 2 of the 3 wingers. On defense, I mentioned Thrun, Ruda, Vlasic and Benning have been together, and Ferraro and Burrows. So I'm pretty sure, I would guess that at least for night one, because I don't really see them scratching any of the veteran mainstays the first day, opening night. So I think those guys are going to be safe, which means that the last couple of days, they've been running Knyazhov with Emberson. So that'd be my guess on who they sit, at least opening night. Injuries and poor play, can dictate things quickly in the future. And the Sharks are, funny enough, deeper on defense. granted, deeper in bottom pairing defensemen, but they have a lot of valid NHL guys, just all kind of bottom pairing guys for the most part. But they have a lot of them, though. And so yeah, somebody's going to sit. So that's sort of my feel for the opening night.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me, I think I agree with you. I don't know why, but I feel like against Vegas, I feel like they're gonna want to run with like Smith and Zetterlund.
Yeah, Smith, I think I feel like is
rather than LeBanc. And that's I just feel like the physicality aspect of it. I know that David Quinn's gonna want to come out hitting. I just have this feeling against Vegas opening night that he's gonna want to come with a physical lineup.
Right.
And LeBanc doesn't bring the most physical element to his game.
Yeah, I think it could be between Zetterlund and LeBanc. I feel Smith is the safest of the three wingers, I would say. Yeah, I agree on that.
So we'll see. I mean, it's a possibility that LeBanc is in instead of Zetterlund, or Zetterlund gets a game or two and then doesn't really produce and LeBanc comes back in. It's kind of interesting because the Sharks do have a lot of skilled wingers, you know, like Zadina and Hoffman and Eklund and Barabanov, Duclair, a lot of this skilled but not very physical wingers.
Right.
And then LeBanc is just another one on top. So, it is interesting what they did with the last minute defense. Basically, everybody went on to injured reserve or season opening injured reserve.
Yeah.
and now we have eight defensemen. And six are going to play tomorrow. So
yeah, we'll see. And but I think there's injuries or whatever. Suddenly, it makes it easier to figure out what to do with
I'm excited for Thrun. I think this is going to be interesting.
I have a bold Thrun prediction.
About Henry Thrun. But so that's our opening night roster. Obviously, things can change tomorrow. If they do, you'll be on top of it, I'm sure, Shane.
Yeah, but they ran the same lines for four straight days. The defense, they've run the same defense for the last 2 days. I don't think there will be too much. I mean, you're not going to bother with all this practice with the same exact lines if you're not going to at least give them a spin together. And like I said, it could change by the second period. Vegas can drop a three spot on Kakanen and, then we have a blender of lines already, you don't want to see that the first night of the season. But in terms of at least the first period, I feel pretty confident that that's how they'll run things.
So speaking of that name, Kakanen, he is our opening night starter.
Right.
That's it was kind of
you called that.
I got the coin flip correct on the Kakanen being the opening night starter. So, and people mentioned it during this preseason that he looked a little bit more confident. And he looked a little bit more sound in net, at least in preseason.
Sure.
So it'll be interesting. He's going up against a Stanley Cup caliber team.
Former teammate Aiden Hill.
And former teammate Aiden Hill. I'm excited for Kakanen. I do worry about this first game though, just because it's going to be a very difficult test, I imagine. This whole, actually, first 2 weeks of the Sharks schedule is difficult. But it's cool that he's getting the opening night start.
Earned it. Blackwood, I think, has been – I don't think that David Quinn is blowing smoke up. But, he said that he's like Blackwood in the preseason. And I think Blackwood has been good in the preseason. But Kakanen, I believe, won both preseason games he played. Mm-hmm. And he has been better. And so we talk about the meritocracy thing, right? And we talked about how, for some guys who are waiver exempt, it doesn't really apply quite as much. And there's nothing wrong with that. We talked about last week with Thrun when we thought that Thrun would be the one to get sent down. But anyway, in this case, though, it makes sense that it is a little bit more of a pure meritocracy just because their contracts are very similar, about the same age. I thought that Blackwood would get the edge because I think that they are hoping that, of course, one of these guys emerges as a true starter, but Blackwood is sort of the new guy here, right? Just acquired this past summer. Also, too, he is Mike's guy in terms of Mike's the one who acquired him. Mike Greer's the one who acquired him. Also, Mike knew him in New Jersey. We'll see how long a rope that Kakanen has, but if he plays, of course, as well as he did in the preseason, he's going to have a very, very long leash.
And somebody has a bold prediction about Kakanen in the bold prediction
section.
Yes, it's me.
Oh, so much teasing going on here. Yeah,
I know.
Tickle me with a feather.
We're getting there. So, all right, let's move on to the Sharks captain. Logan Couture. Shang, it's been kind of a, I'll call it a rope-a-dope of what the news are about Logan Couture's status. It was like maybe beginning for or ready for the opening night roster. What do we think now?
Well, right now, he's had an admitted setback. At least David Quinn called it a little bit of a setback. He was back skating. It looked like he was, you know, kind of wrapping himself up to, if not for opening night, because that was a little too soon, you know. But I believe he started skating last Friday. That was his first day skating. And then they went to Napa. And I assume that Logan did not skate when they were in Napa. He skated on Monday. And then he's had the last 2 days off. That's not a good, that's not a good sign. You know, if he had just taken a day off, then got back at it, you know, that's normal, I think. But 2 days off, not a great sign. So so right now, and also too, and it's beyond just taking tomorrow off. They're pretty much going to give him the rest of the week off. So again, not a good marker. And you know, we will see. If it is a groin injury, you know, you want to be very careful with that. Obviously, we saw that with Erik Karlsson 5 years ago, and it's not at the point that I've heard any talk of surgery or anything like that, because again, we saw what that did to Karlsson, right, and his trajectory with the Sharks. But it's definitely not great that it's moving backwards. And so, yeah, I think for a little bit there, it looked like it was always has been termed a week-to-week injury. But, you know, with him getting back on the ice and skating and ramping up, you know, maybe you think, okay, week-to-week is maybe like maybe he'll play in 2 weeks or something like that. But now, though, I think it's going to be a little longer than that.
Yeah, not encouraging is the best way to put the setback word for Logan Couture, which kind of changes things a little bit in terms of, especially for somebody like Bortolo, about how long he's going to be up with the Sharks, especially if he can actually hold his own.
This is opportunity. You know, there's been a lot of questions, I think, fair about Thomas's two-way game and his willingness to play inside and all these kind of things, right? And in a preseason, he's had a couple good games. He also had bad games too. You know, this wasn't a wire-to-wire, you know, strong preseason from him either. And so this is it. You know, this is the opportunity. And he's also with, you know, excellent line mates. You know, he's actually arguably playing with the Sharks' strongest pair of wingers in Barabanov and Claire. You know, Eklund's unproven. Kunin is not a big offensive force, right? Hoffman hasn't been a big offensive force for a couple of years. Zadina has never been a big offensive force. And not yet, at least. And so, yeah, so he's going to get – he's getting a clear shot. And so if he – you know, if he can't run with this, then that's going to be sort of a mark against him, because the opportunity is right here and it's with the right players.
Yeah, it's actually thinking about that lineup, it's very interesting. There is some inexperience in the top six. Eklund's there, and then you've got Hoffman, who's not like a consistent 200-foot player, who's kind of up.
And
in,
he
like,
also just
line.
Hasn't scored as much the last couple of years.
He's on the downswing of his career. Yeah. And then Kunin, who's more notably like a third liner rather than like a second. And Zadina, who's a little unproven.
Right, very unproven. Yeah, so I think the idea here, and that's what coaches do start every year. They try to have balanced lines.
Yep.
If you remember a couple of years ago, the Sharks, they had signed Nick Bonino, and they put him with Kevin LeBanc on the third line. On paper, that sounded pretty good, because this is Nick Bonino that wasn't, at that point, not that far away from being the, you know, arguably the premier third line center in the league, winning the cup with the Penguins. You know, LeBanc wasn't too far from scoring, you know, 56 points, right, in his breakout year. That sounded like, well, that's actually could be a pretty good third line. But, you know, those two didn't seem to have much chemistry. You know, I think Bonino went like the first 18 games without a point. You know, LeBanc, I think, injured his shoulder and you know, early in the season, and he was done for the year, right? And so, you know, these kind of, you know, but it was the Sharks' attempt, though, I think, to kind of balance things out, though, you know, just to, you know, and actually, you know, I just wrote a story on that about sort of the lines from from to start last year, right? And you see sort of the same sort of sense of, you know, trying to balance things out. You know, last year they had Oscar Lindblom on your second line. You know, they had Luke Kunin on the first line with Meyer and Hurdle. And, you know, if you want to make, like, the power unit out of last year's team, which was weaker up front, it would have been probably Meyer, Hurdle, and LeBanc. And, you know, which was actually the line that had the most success during the season. But, you know, at the beginning of the season, you try to, do sort of the most ideal sort of thing. You know, sort of like if everything happens right, everything falls right for us, you know, this is how it falls. So
not only is Bortolo going to have to shine with good wingers, he's also going to have to shine when they remove those good wingers and put them up higher if they decide to do that. Like if they move
won't move them, right? And then if Couture gets healthy and Bortolo has been really good, then that, you know, gives you what the good problem to have, right? And hopefully that is what happens, right? Where Bortolo is so good that he cannot, you know, be sent. Shouldn't be sent down. Sure. My guess is that he's going to need a little more time. Not to say that he's not going to do well with Barabanov and Clary. He's also on the power play too, so he's going to get that chance too. So not to say he's not going to do well with them, but I'm not sure if he's going to do enough that the Sharks will be like, okay, once Couture is back, like, okay, this guy is going to be up here. You know, now we have to figure out who plays, who gets sent to the wing, assuming everybody's healthy. You know, Hurdle, Couture, or Granlin, right? So, but speaking about predictions, my guess is that that's not what happens with Bortolo.
Yeah, and it would be a big improvement, I think, from last year if it happens. And, you know, it could. But I think
it could happen. It's just a lot of what ifs, though, right? There's so Hoffman, Zadina, Duclair. I mean, those are huge, huge what ifs. But they're not bad bets.
Let's move on to because you mentioned, I'm all about segues today, because you mentioned Duclair. So the NHL, in its infinite wisdom, has decided to ban, which is against their own rule book. If you've seen that tweet. They have a rule out that says that players can use whatever color tape they want to tape their sticks in warm-ups and such.
Well, the rule is supposed to be, like, only black or white tape, right? And they made an exception for not to jump in, like, before you finish, but they made an exception before that for the pry tape.
Yeah, so they now have announced that it is illegal or not allowed to wear
it's not going to be allowed
for the upcoming season, and this is after they had already announced that they couldn't do specialty jerseys like pride jerseys anymore,
military appreciation, Black History jerseys, and during warm-ups, right?
And it's gotten a lot of backlash on Twitter, and also I would say deservedly so. Basically, as soon as anybody realizes what they're doing, they kind of say, why are you outlawing this? It seems to be like a personal choice that the NHL doesn't want the players to make. So Duclair gave you an interesting a quote on this, right? What was his quote?
Well, he gave a lot of them, and you can see the story up on San Jose Hockey Now. The one that I sort of highlighted was that, you know, and you know, let's give some background on Duclair. Duclair is of Haitian descent. He's a very outspoken member of the Hockey Diversity Alliance. Duclair has worn Pride jerseys and has put on Pride tape too before.
Sure.
And, you know, most famously in the 2020-21 season, when he joined the Florida Panthers, he wore on his skates before Martin Luther King Day, 2020-21 season, he wore skates that said BLM for Black Lives Matter, had a raised fist logo, also had the phrase "Change Hockey Culture." And the left skate had the Hockey Diversity Alliance logo. And so these are some things that if the NHL is going to follow by the letter of their law, what they seem to be stating here is that there will be no zero on the ice demonstrations of expressions or statement of belief.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they say, like, yeah, off the ice, do whatever you want. But, you know, on the ice, things like pry tape, right? That's an adjustment to your stick. So any kind of adjustments to your gear to reflect that. Actually, the policy goes so far to specify stickers and ribbons are banned from player uniforms. Adult coaches are allowed to wear ribbons. So very, very specific of what can or cannot be worn. So anyway, I find this to be, and I'm not saying anything different than a lot of people. It is so, you know, Duclair said, going backwards. You know, this feels like it's going backwards. And I have to agree with them. He also said something about, and some people have sort of fought against this online. He said that that's why the NBA, NFL leagues like that, they're always growing year after year, always getting new fans, new viewership. So I'm gonna kind of explain that a little bit more. But anyway, though, before I get to that, though, you know, this is so going backwards. You know, Everybody knows I wrote a lot about James Reimer and his decision to not wear the Pride jersey. And I got a lot of flack online for what I wrote because it's what I felt. And I did not agree with it. I did not like it. But I did give Reimer credit for being willing to talk about it and never shying away from the issue. But I 100% did not agree with them. I thought that was a step backward. Before this Pride tape ban, in about June, the NHL, of course, like you alluded to, said no more warm-up jerseys, specialty warm-up jerseys. And that encompasses everything, not just Pride warm-up jerseys, but like we mentioned, Military Appreciation Night, Black History, whatever. You know, there's been Hockey Fights Cancer. Hockey Fights Cancer, you know, is well, yeah, the St. Patrick's Day, right? Whatever, right? And so anyway... I'm obviously not a fan of it because, and again, you know, I've been thinking, I've been very clear about what I wrote, but I understood that, I mean, a lot of people will disagree with me on this, that, like, I get where the NHL and NHLPA, you know, it sounds like it was the NHL's decision, but the PA is sort of allowing it, I guess, right? They're not fighting back against it. And I understood where that was coming from because last year we had, you know, when a Reimer would decline to wear it, a Provorov would decide not to wear it, the Stahl brothers in Florida, right? And it became like it became a media frenzy, and I was a part of that, you know, and it became a sort of asking a player, are you going to wear it or not? Are you going to wear it or not, right? And people criticized me for this last year, and I will agree to a certain extent that, like, you know, people said, oh, you know, people are telling me, like, oh, you're over covering this. You're not emphasizing enough the guys who did wear the jersey. And I will say that I tried to. Like, I tried to interview a couple of, you know, I don't want to give away the people, you know, if they didn't want to do it for their own reasons, right? But I tried to spotlight and try to interview and try to make stories out of a couple of people who did wear it or did support this cause, right? And try to spotlight them. But those sort of requests were declined. And so I didn't write those stories. And so it ended up on my site as, you know, being purely pretty much about Reimer and his decision. And I think that on a lot of websites, a lot of the news, right, that was sort of the focus, right, was on the decision not to wear and not celebrating those who did wear, you know. Yeah. And I can get that the group of all of just the players in general, you know, they don't want to be – you know, most players, I think, are happy to wear for all these causes, right? Pride Night, Black History, et cetera, right? But they don't want to be in a position of being, you know, like it's a media firestorm if they don't wear it or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they wear it because they you know, basically, you may not agree with every aspect or everything about, you know, about living an LGBTQ lifestyle or everything about Black History or Black Lives Matters or whatever. You may not agree with every part of that. But in general, though, they, you know, they you know, they have a general, maybe, I don't know, sympathy or agreement, and they're fine with it, right? But when it becomes something where it's a media firestorm, it's a big issue, right? Then they want to shy away from that, right? And I mean, it's normal because, look, in the end, like, I know people expect more of them, but they're hockey players. They're here to play hockey. That's literally, you know, how they make their money. Sure. All this other stuff, you know, can be a, you know, I hate to use the word distraction, but it distracts them, you know, from their goal of being the best hockey player, the best at their job that they can be. And so I have a general understanding of why the jersey thing and even my part in it, right, or media's part in it, right, why, like, it did make a smidgen of sense to be like, okay,
there's just
no
more.
The
distinction you're trying to make is between what's mandatory, like, everybody's got to wear these things, and it becomes like a media firestorm.
If you don't, right? And look, it's fair. Like, if you don't, if it's mandatory and you don't wear it, or, you know, or if everyone's been wearing it for a decade, right, and suddenly this year, you know, 12 people decided not to wear it. That's a story, by the way. You know, I'm sorry. Some people, that's another part of it. It was definitely a story.
It is.
You know,
sure.
It was definitely a story. You know, like, I agree that media, we could have covered the positive side of it, the many, the 95% or whatever players who did wear it, right? So I agree with that part of it. But it doesn't mean that 5% or whatever percent that didn't wear it, that's a huge story. That's a huge story. And so anyway, though, so I want to draw that distinction. So the big thing with this pride tape that is so, you know, retrograde, so just idiotic, is that the pride tape is something that a player could have just, it's not a jersey, it's just something that a player can choose to put on whether he chooses to not. And I'm pretty sure, you know, some people will say, oh, it's going to be the same thing as last year. You're going to question players about why they didn't put on the tape. I don't really think it's going to be like that. It's not as, I don't know, bold a statement as everybody has been wearing the jersey for, you know, a decade. The teams that had Pride Nights have had these. I know not every team has had it, but, you know, Pride Nights have been around. I think the jerseys have been around for maybe a decade or so, right? And there's never been a case that we've known before that of a player not wearing it, right? Of course, there are players that maybe wouldn't wear it but they weren't given like those teams just didn't have Pride warm-up jerseys. They may have had Pride jerseys for auction, but they didn't have Pride warm-up jerseys, right? That players wore during warm-ups, right? So it was never just out there who, you know, didn't want to put it on, you know? And so everybody wore it for a decade. Suddenly people, you know, weren't wearing it, right? But the Pride tape, though, has always been a matter of, you know, I don't think that every time a player has worn a Pride jersey that they have Pride tape with it, right? And so let's say the Sharks on their Pride night this year, right, which I think is in January, let's say like half the players, you know, decide, let's say NHL justice policy or whatever, or the players protest, which I hope they do, and they just put on the Pride tape and take on the fines or whatever, right? But anyway, though, like, let's say like 10 Sharks, you know, put on the Pride tape and 8 of them don't. I'm not going to, you know, chase 8 players down and be like, hey, how come you didn't wear the Pride tape? You know, that would be like, okay, like Duclair, right? I mentioned Duclair with his skates, right? Before Martin Luther King Day, right? And he had the Black Lives Matter and Change Hockey Culture, all that stuff on his skates, right?
Sure.
I'm pretty sure, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, when Duclair did that his 17 other teammates, no one put anything on their skates.
Yeah.
You know, was anybody chasing the other Florida players like, hey, how come you didn't wear Black Lives Matter skates? Does that mean you don't support Black Lives Matter? No.
No.
You know?
Or, you know, the default response could just be, you know, like, I've been doing this exact same thing in warmups for my entire career, and I don't want to change it. Hockey players are like super sisters. You know,
there's a lot of ways that, like, it doesn't
become a huge thing. It's just like, oh yeah, I didn't want to do
it. I'm not going to say that, like, no reporter will ask some player, hey, how come you don't have the Bright tape on, you know? But it would not be the degree of this. Again, you got to, you know, again, the circumstances, these are different things. Like, the Pride jersey was a big thing because for a decade, every player wore them. That as far as we know, no one. Don't know if it's mandatory. I guess it's basically mandatory because it's just a general mandatory. Like you wear what your teammates wear at warmups.
Exactly. It was expected, I guess.
Yeah, but that is said with again acknowledging that not every team did have a Pride warmup jersey. That's a big distinction. Mm-hmm. I know famously, I think it's been noted that like Alexander Ovechkin, the Capitals, had never had a Pride warmup night, and a presumption. Presumption is that Ovechkin wouldn't have worn it, maybe, you know, and so stuff like that were like it was skirted around, so we don't really know. But anyway, it was a big story because for a decade, every team that had a Pride warm-up jersey night, that every player that was in the game wore it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then suddenly players weren't doing it, and then so that's why that became a story. But the Pride tape has never had that sort of
Feels like every player doing it, targeted to be like, I don't want to, like the NHL basically saying, I don't want this kind of individualism, I don't want this kind of
it just feels very like corporate diversity. Like let's have as little controversy as possible. And anyway, I'm gonna finish up at least for myself, like,
sure,
Duclair's thought about the NBA and NFL and the leagues not growing right, or I'm sorry, they're growing their leagues right, and people are like, the NFL has never had Pride warm-up jersey. That's not the fucking point. Like, the point of what he's saying is that you don't close doors on people. Like, yeah. And I get there's another sort of aspect to it, that you don't want to close the doors to people that, for whatever reason, hate Pride, right? Or, because that is a big part of your fan base. I'm not denying that, you know? But, again, that's the distinction here. So the warm-up jerseys, I kind of get the business sense of, even if I don't agree philosophically or personally, right, but I get the business sense of it. The Pride mm-hmm. tape, though, like, no one's going to say anything. Again, if, like, Nine Sharks decide to, they're gonna have the Pride tape, and Nine say, oh, well, you know, I don't really feel like it. It's not my thing. Or Black History Night, you know, if, you know, Declare has something, but, like, I don't know, Fabian Zetterlund decides not to have anything. Does that mean Fabian Zetterlund's a racist? Of course not. And so like that's the point, that like, who are you mm-hmm. appeasing with this Pride tape thing? There is no there's no stand to take here. You just let the guys choose kind of what they want to support. They want to support a Military Appreciation Night. I don't know if it's like maybe disrespectful, but like if a player were to have like military camouflage sort of like tape, right, and like a few players opted not to do it, no one would say anything about it. Just be like, okay, for like, we know Brent Burns was very, a pro-military, that was a big thing for him when he was with the Sharks, right? If a Brent Burns has it, but Erik Karlsson chooses not to, there's no one's really making a statement,
Sure.
Maybe Brent is just saying, like, I care a little bit more about this, kind of picking and choosing your causes, kind of,
Yeah. I have a few things to say about it. They're all pretty much exactly what I'm going to echo what you said. Basically, when you make it a mandate or when it's kind of mandatory, certain players like James Reimer, the Staal brothers, will feel like, rightly or wrongly, like it's going against whatever they believe in.
Sure.
Which,
sure,
you can make a lot about it. You can hate on them all they want, but it's what they're saying that they believe in and they don't want to do it. And the NHL is responding to that in some way, probably more so because of the business side of things, by saying, okay, we won't make this a thing anymore.
Yeah,
this
it won't make you
this,
wear it.
This is different. This is like you're just basically squashing their individual choice because you want to, or because you feel like it's a better business decision.
It's the most careful thing to do.
It's the most careful thing. The most like the most non-problematic thing to do is to basically say that nobody has their own individual rights in a league that has been like notoriously like shit on for being like unable to promote its own stars, unable to promote its individual aspects of their players, who and they're up against leagues like the NBA, MLS, where they're like getting more and more stars. Like, you get Messi, who comes to the MLS, you get LeBron James every night for 6 months on ESPN. In the NHL, it's like got very little to promote their individuality. They're just purposely saying, we don't want it. We want no more individuality. We want people to not have things to believe in. They only believe in the good of the game. They only believe in the NHL and its rigid structure. And I think that's really dumb. there was a there's been a bunch of articles out for the past like 10, 15 years about the growth of the NHL. And there's been some growth, obviously, like a little bit of growth in terms of the USA market, but not a lot comparatively between like MLS and NBA and F1 even is like coming around. The growth is like very, very little for 18 to 25 year olds. It's like last between all of those leagues and obviously behind like MLB and NFL. So it's bad when you're that bad for the younger generation. And then you're purposely being like, we don't want these people to try and connect with that generation at all. That's just my opinion.
I want to go back to what Duclair said about the NBA and NFL. Like, I know it's not a one-for-one thing. Like, if you wear Pride Tape, that means people will watch. The NHL is gonna overtake Major League Baseball. No, it's not. It's not about that. But it's actually, if you look at it, look, if you are the like the fifth or sixth most popular team sport in America, don't close doors on people.
True.
You know, don't make people feel like the doors are closing. I mean, I know some people will be like, Pride Tape never stopped a gay person from liking hockey or disliking hockey. Of course, you know, I get that. But like, this is such big news, such a bad look. And so I'm going to give Angel some credit, you know, like other leagues didn't have, they didn't have Pride warm-up jerseys, as many people pointed out. NHL was a leader to some degree in that. But now they've, like, totally reversed. It's like they got criticized. Some players got criticized. NHL got criticized for maybe not for making the play, for not making these players wear the Pride jerseys, all this kind of stuff, right? That they've gone from being, like, slightly progressive to, we're going to totally, you know, be shut-ins now. We're going to totally, you know, like, turtle now. And that just... That's stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bad really look. Dumb. You know, it just makes no sense. You know, like this specific thing makes no sense, because just let the players decide that if they want to put on Pride. Yeah. Don't make it a thing. Now the NHL has made it a thing, and they're probably going to reverse it, or players will protest or something, right? But they look bad already. You know, even thinking that this was a sensible idea. Yeah. to try to enforce, to even put out a mandate on that, like just a terrible look.
It's awful. And it's a thing. Yeah. It's why are these like slogans of hockey is for everyone when they continually just try and prove that it's not, like over and over again. And the amount of scandals that continually happen with hockey is just never ending, it feels like. And I don't know.
Scandals are one thing, but like literally just shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah,
but literally, like, that's your own choice to decide to say, like, hey, no more Pride Tape. Like, specify, no more Pride Tape. You know, no more. And, of course, they'll say, oh, it's all statements of all kinds. But why would you even do that? You know, like, who was bothered by just by Pride? No, the ones, I don't think people were really, I mean, there'll be some people howling about it, but players had it for years. No one was really bothered by it, you know?
To be honest, like the few times I saw it, I'd be like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I forget about it. And somebody who, you know, actually is really involved in LGBT causes, they might look at that and go, wow, actually, that's really cool. And that's
awesome. That's the point. Open the door. That's the hockey is for everyone. Open the door. Even open the door for the racists and the haters. Let's be honest. That's all part of people who like the league, right? And anyway, it just makes no sense to this particular part of the decision. But anyway, let's move on.
We've been talking a lot about it. Yeah. I mean, we had a whole episode on like the Barracuda and fighting. So you know, we almost had a whole episode here with this one. No, anyway, we'll see. I really do hope they like combat it, and it's like the fighting the evil empire of the NHL.
Yeah,
it's just Scott Laughton put out a thing that he's gonna wear it.
I hope the players just put it on. Yeah, I mean,
you know,
how much is the NHL going to fine? And also, players can just just don't pay it. See what the NHL does. I mean, come on, you know. Yeah.
We'll see what the NHLPA puts out about it, too. I don't think they've actually said anything yet.
Yeah, that's, kind of
different,
telling in its own way, I guess. But yeah, but.
Maybe a bit.
Yeah.
All right. We are moving on to the last segment of the show, which is our bold predictions for the season. We've got a couple each, and we're going to talk through our reasoning about them, but. Shang, do you want to start us off?
Yes. I'm going to say that the Sharks clear 70 points this year, which is, I think, a very, very bold prediction. The Sharks had 60 last year, and they lost Erik Karlsson. And this one comes more from Phil, I think. A little bit, it's the law of averages, right, that the Sharks, you know, were close in a lot of games. The Sharks should have had a better record than they had last year, at least through the trade deadline. I mean, they were, I think, playing actually about 500 hockey. They just couldn't close leads. They lost, you know, they lost games in overtime, right?
Sure.
So things, you know, I think they had like 16 overtime losses or something, which was, I think, a team franchise record. So things like that, I don't think will repeat. They'll do a better job of holding leads. They won't have a lot of leads, that's why I predict, but I think that they're going to do enough to clear 70 points, be slightly better in terms of actual on the ice improvement. Besides law of averages, I do generally like their forward group, even though there's maybe, you know, too many reclamation, too many like what ifs, but I think overall though it should be a stronger group, and I expect I expect some better goaltending to emerge, even though there isn't necessarily a great reason to believe on that. You know, I'm not going to use Kakinen's preseason, just preseason. I'm not going to use their success, Kakinen and Blackwood, from a couple years ago. Just going to say that, yeah, at some point, this is maybe a little law of averages, at some point the Sharks just need to get better goaltending at some point.
Sure. I'm going to be the pessimist in the room. The Sharks finish, and this is my prediction, with the worst record in the NHL.
That's not a bold prediction, but
it's not bold.
Yeah, I shouldn't have let that one pass through. That's definitely not bold at all.
It is the to be fair, there are some bad teams in the NHL left that could challenge the Sharks for this kind of record, right?
But still, the Sharks are the anti Stanley Cup favorite. You know, they're like Carolina. Basically, who's gonna win Stanley Cup? Carolina, Vegas, you know, Colorado, right? All down the line.
But we
right?
had to have the something to counteract are, yeah. your optimism,
sure.
which is my optimism of the worst
my
record in
optimism,
the NHL.
Optimism, yeah, in like major
optimism.
Quotes. Yeah,
they had so last year the Sharks had 22 wins, which was the worst, the least amount of wins in the NHL. I mean, unfortunately, they finished fourth, even though they had 22 wins, because they had 16 overtime losses, which was the second most overtime losses of any team behind Calgary, was 17.
Yeah.
So you're right. There will be some kind of law of averages, I think, in terms of some of those games are going to go the other way, probably, and maybe they get some better goaltending, which I think they will this year. But I don't think that they make up for the lack of actual first-line talent. They have a lot of depth. They have a lot of good guys in the second and third line or around those archetypes, right? Like Hoffman and Duclair and Barabanov. They don't have any really first. I mean, they have Hurdle, they have Couture, who are first liners. Maybe Hurdle you can swing on like a Boston or something where they have really good wingers or whatever.
Yeah.
But they don't have really first liner star talent at all. They've lost Meyer, they've lost Karlsson.
Sure.
Both of which were able to put up star seasons, point per game seasons, star defenseman seasons. I think that alone is going to make them push down almost every game where their first line of another team can dominate our first line, no matter what. So I just see them losing a lot of games overall. And then I think by the trade deadline, actually probably by about January, I think this is when we're going to start seeing the Sharks kind of move a different direction, try and get younger guys to play and start selling off pieces. It's going to be another tank year, in my opinion. And, you know, this isn't a bold prediction. This is just a prediction that they get the worst overall points in the NHL.
And, you know, I'll say, too, that, like, my prediction is contingent on them probably, because after the deadline, they're, like they did last year, like they did in the last couple of years, they're probably going to really kind of fall off the face of the earth after the deadline. And so they'll probably need to be, like, at a 75, maybe even 80-point pace before the deadline. And that's a very, very bold, like, sort of pace for them to meet.
Yeah.
So it was 80 points is basically 500 teams. So, but anyway, though, unless you have something else to continue, I'm going to go on with the next one.
Prediction.
Yeah. Okay. So my prediction is Filip Zadina will score 20 plus goals this year, which I think will be great at 1.1 million. And if he does do that, he produces in that area, then we're talking about somebody that maybe he's just 23, that maybe you think about long term with the team. And part of the reason why I'm going with this one is, and he didn't score a goal in the preseason, so it's not based on that, obviously. But I really liked the other parts of his game. I was like, I've talked about this last podcast that that I've been surprised by just how hard he competes, just the little things, right? The stuff that keeps you in lineups, right? And he does a lot of those things, which you don't expect out of a guy that sixth overall pick, drafted to score, hasn't scored, right? You think it's just because, the stereotype of guys like that is, bad defense, bad effort. That's not the case with Zadina. David Quinn, like I mentioned, has praised both Zadina's work ethic, his competitiveness, has called him an honest player, right? I think the main thing that is blocking Zadina from that potential is Zadina himself. He's talked about confidence being an issue. He's hard on himself. So I think the key is that if he can get to the point where he's not so hard on himself, if he's not scoring, if he goes like 7-8 games without a goal, like if he's doing the other things right, and I think it'll help that there's a deeper forward group. So maybe hopefully other guys are scoring too. So it's not as noticeable if Zadina goes into a slump. But if he does the other things well, I think he'll be fine, and that's, we talk about this when we talk a lot about the difference between William Eklund and Thomas Bortel, at least last year, right? That Eklund has a B game, he has a clear B game that he can rely on if he's not scoring. And, Eklund doesn't seem to have a confidence, this kind of confidence problem. So if he's not scoring, he's just going to kind of do the same thing. And then the points will come, right? Sure. With Bortolo, we question, we saw a little more of it during preseason. But the B game, if he's not scoring, what is he doing to help you, right? Zadina is doing things that can help a team if he's not scoring. He just needs to stick to it and not be discouraged if he's not scoring, kind of. And, if you have a mental or sort of a lack of confidence, right, and then that sort of bleeds into other areas, right? Don't let it bleed into other areas if you're not scoring. So if he's able to do that, then I think I could see him being sort of a potential core piece for the Sharks, the next as they try to get out of the rebuild.
Yeah, and they're giving him, first line minutes with the best center on the Sharks, probably.
He's playing power play too. And Hurdle, as we saw with, we talked about Jacob Peterson and Barabanov a couple years ago. Hurdle, whatever you want to say about them, Hurdle makes, it is a good enough player that he makes it easier for his line mates.
Sure.
And so he's the right guy, sort of, to put with a guy like Zadina, I think.
Yeah, and I was reading some things online about, Detroit fans were mentioning that he didn't have that kind of compete or physicality to his game when he was in Detroit. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, I didn't really watch him all that much in Detroit. So
I didn't either, to be honest.
I don't know if
sometimes it's fan perception though. Yeah, so I'll check on him because solid. According to the fans, David Quinn screwed over Alexis Lafreniere and Capo Kako.
Internet
and
talk.
It actually turns out that Lafreniere and Kako just aren't that good.
They might not be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lafreniere has had a rough go of it. Anyway, okay. So your predictions about goal scoring and Zadina getting 20, which would be his highest goal scoring total.
We're high 10.
Yeah, so my prediction is that Anthony Duclair, is going to be the Sharks' goal-scoring leader this year, at least until the trade deadline. If he gets traded, I'm not counting it. So, if he hits to, 20 goals or 25,
sure,
and then, gets, one goal with whoever he gets traded to, I'm not counting it. But
okay.
He's going to be the Sharks' goal-scoring leader. Last year, the goal-scoring leaders were Timo Meier with 31 before he was traded at his 57th game. Eric Karlsson with 25 in 82 games, as well as Logan Couture with 27 in his 82 games. So those top three, you have Couture, who's injured until we don't know when. Karlsson's gone and Meyer's gone. Below that, you've got Hurdle at 22 and Barabanov and LeBanc both had 15 last year. So I just think that Duclair has the ability to score 30 goals. He did so a year ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah, 31,
31 goals. I think they're going to give him more and more ice time as the season goes on. I think he's going to be the Sharks goal scoring leader, at least until the trade deadline, is my prediction.
Okay. I'm going to call Hurdle for this one. I'm expecting a bit of a bounce back year for Tommy. I think also like Zadina, you know, like Hurdle's in his own way a little bit mentally. Just, and I think Hurdle's problem is a little different. It's not a confidence thing, but it's, you know, taking so much, you know, on his shoulders. Big contract, you know, team is losing. He's a star. He's got to, you know, I think he's going to do a little. So far, you know, he's sort of shown a sort of a you know, like, I think he's gonna lighten up a bit, you know, not to say that he's gonna take losing easily, but just, you know, just not be put as much pressure on himself. I think he's gonna be able to do that, and so I think he's gonna clear, if he's healthy, I would expect him to clear, you know, 70 points, you know, kind of be that 30 goal guy he has been too, right, in his best seasons, right? So I kind of expect that kind of season from him, sort of a season that will, you know, make his contract, even though the Sharks won't win a lot of games, like, you know, people will understand, you know, last year they weren't happy with it. But this year they'll understand why Hurdle was paid $8 million a year. So that's my call for a goal scorer.
I like Hurdle a lot. I worry that without some of his, like, usual line mates around him and without Carlson and Meyer, mm-hmm. that he might regress a bit. That's my own.
Well, but you can argue though, there's more opportunity. He's going to shoot more, you know, hopefully, on the power play last year with Meyer, right? Meyer was the clear, like, you know, shooter, go-to option, right? Maybe Hurdle will shoot more. Hurdle will take it upon himself more. You know, if his line mates are, you know, Zadina and Hoffman, like, of course, Hoffman is a you know, historically a great shooter too. But, you know, I can see Hurdle being more assertive. And so that will add to his production. Also, too, add the note, too, that, you know, power play actually was an area that, you know, Erik Karlsson didn't really affect that positively in his time with the Sharks, even last year. I think the Sharks finished 25th on the power play last year. So I don't think that's so much, like, the loss of Karlsson will be felt as much on the power play, at least. Obviously, on 5-on-5, it will be huge, but power play, maybe not.
Yeah, we'll see. And it would be a good thing for the Sharks, like, future, if Hurdle could turn around and be like a, he's still a mainstay top six center kind of thing, because that would be huge for the time being. All right, what's your next one, Chang, after our goal-scoring leaders?
Yeah, let's see. Sorry, let me pull up my list.
You got it.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So this one is might worry some people. And this is – I'm going to say this out front, that this is pure guess. This isn't educated guess. This is just a pure guess, right? We talked about Couture's health. Obviously, you know, went backward a little bit, right? With him not skating the last couple of days, after skating for 2 days, Friday and Monday. So I'm going to put out there that want to be very clear about this, that this is just a guess. This is not a this is not based on anything, you know, anything that I know under the table through sources, whatever, right? But my guess is that Couture doesn't play until December, and part of it is, obviously, you know, he's had a setback. You know, my guess, everybody's guess, is that something like a groin injury or something like that that gets aggravated if you push it too much, and that you want to be very careful with. You know, you don't want to push too much. You want to give it a shot, like they did with the last, you know, when Couture did skate, but, like, you don't want to push it too much. And so I think that, obviously, he's not trying to get ready for the playoffs. You know, there isn't a huge reason for him to rush himself. Even with Erik Karlsson in 2018-19, like, you know, that's a team that, yeah, I mean, you know, there was an argument that Karlsson got rushed there too, or he rushed himself. He pushed himself too much, but it was a good team. He wants, you know, you want to be out there when the team is doing well. You want to be a part of that, and that sort of thing, right? With in this case, though, with Couture, though, like, obviously, it probably helps the draft position the longer he sits out. I don't think the Sharks will make him sit out for that reason. But there just isn't as many reasons for him to kind of push himself. You know, like, you want him to be healthy when he starts to play this season, like 100% healthy. And so that's my bold prediction. We'll see. You know, maybe he's going to play in 2 weeks from now, and
or
I'm
Thursday.
Real stupid. No. You know, he's been ruled out, so he's not playing. Joking. Yeah, and if he's not skating this week, he's not playing. I mean, the best case is maybe like 2 weeks from now. That's the very best case, I think, or something like
it
that.
It is a bad omen when they say setback or when
they keep posting
like, you know, timelines that go further and further back, that it tells me they don't really have a handle on it at all.
Yep.
So, and, you know, if it is something nagging that is hard to really gauge when you're going to be 100%, and they don't want to rush him, there's no real reason to it. Kuchar's, you know, been a lifelong Shark, and this season is likely not going to be the one that they win the Stanley Cup in. So, it's for real. For real, that's my bold prediction: is that this is the year the Sharks do not win the Stanley. Anyway, all right. So my prediction has nothing to do with injuries. It just has to do with the goaltending. So I predict that Kaapo Kähkönen posts above a .905 is the cutoff I'm giving it. Last year, Kaapo Kähkönen had a .883, which was among one of the worst for goaltenders that have more than like 25 starts. He had 37 games that he played in last year. Very, very poor. It's interesting because the year before, when he was traded for, he only got into like 11 games, but he had a .916 at the end of that year. That was also famously the year that James Reimer put up a .911. So even in his short 11-game stint, he even had above Reimer. Now, you could argue that this was a different Shark system, like under Bob Bugner.
Yeah, it was more defensive.
More defensive, easier for goaltenders to put up good points or good numbers. And that's actually, you mentioned it before, one of the few seasons in the past like 5 years for the Sharks that a Shark goaltender has put up a positive goal saves above expected percentage. Him in 2021, 2022, that's James Reimer. And then 2019, 2020, when Aaron Dell was playing, he had like a .907, which was the only two seasons by a Sharks goaltender with a positive rating, basically. So I think that this will be the third one. And I think Kaapo has had a, hopefully, some adjustment to his play over the summer that he's mentioned. You know, I don't know if it's going to make the Sharks any more of a competitive team, because they are still going to be splitting starts, I think, between him and Blackwood pretty much the whole year, I imagine. But I think in the games that Kaapo is going to play, he's going to play very well.
What do you think Blackwood's save percentage will be?
.891.
Okay, so you're liking you're buying Kähkönen stock this year, but not Blackwood. Okay,
Blackwood, it's been this way for a few years, and like
2 years,
yeah. I guess somewhere around that he just hasn't really put up a like really starting NHL goaltender caliber year at all, and it's tough because he's not old, he's like 27, 28.
He's thought to be probably, if you were to ask not everybody, but I think in general, he's regarded as the more talented of the two. But, you know, of course, consistency is the name of the game, you know, so it's not about, you know, talent level.
Yeah, I'm not as sold on him, but based on his New Jersey play.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a strong opinion on this. I just would be so happy if the Sharks start getting good goaltending, so I don't need to continue on with the tiresome, is it the defense, is it the goaltending debate. Mm-hmm. You know, both suck.
Yeah, and well, the year that we had good goaltending, we ended up with, like, the 11th overall draft pick. So we moved out of, like, the absolute cellar.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like we got that much closer. It was just, like, we moved pretty, you know, 11th overall, basically. All right, what do we got next?
This one maybe is not so bold a prediction, but I'm really liking Granlund coming into this season. I've liked what I've seen. I've liked what I've heard. So I'm going Granlund with over 50 points. And I'll talk about it. Your bold prediction's coming up. But okay, so anyway, so Granlund, I think, will have a bounce back season. I think he's going to be the guy that he was with Nashville a couple years ago. He led all Nashville forwards in playing time 2 years ago on a playoff Nashville team, too. So a pretty good team with pretty good forwards like Matt Duchene, who scored 43 goals that year, Philip Forsberg, right? So it's a pretty strong group of Nashville forwards. But Granlund was the kind of the do every situation power play, top power play unit. He was like maybe second choice on a penalty kill, but a regular penalty killer, right? And so if you're going to miss a guy, if a guy like Couture is going to sit out whatever length of time, Logan's going to sit out, you know, Granlund is really like as, you know, ready-made kind of a substitute kind of, you know, that, or I wouldn't say he's the most ready-made in the league, of course not, but like he is a ready-made perfect almost substitute for Couture. Not the exact same kind of player, but I think that they can contribute in about the same kind of ways, again, you know, on both sides of the ice and in all special teams.
I really liked what I saw from Granlund in the preseason, and I agree, I think he's got some untapped potential there that Pittsburgh obviously couldn't support his contract
right
after they traded for him, and he wasn't playing well there, so they didn't want to keep the risk of having him be on a playoff or playoff hopeful team. But it doesn't mean that he's, you know, worthless. He still was pretty good in Nashville before he was traded, and also was very good 2 years ago. So with some more ice time, with some, you know, probably top power play minutes, I think you're right. I think he could definitely top out 50 points or more. My prediction, this is probably one of the
this is a bold one. I like this one.
I think that Barabanov is going to be our points leader, at least until the trade deadline. I keep saying this because
he has an expiring contract.
And Duclair are both like probable trade targets if the Sharks are not in the playoff hunt, at least for teams that want some depth down the wings. But Barabanov, I just, he's been improving his point totals every year. So he had 47 last year.
It was pretty good. He was on pace for 50, but he just was hurt. If he had been healthy, I don't know.
The four players above him are Erik Karlsson, Couture, Hurdle, and Meier. And Meyer's gone, Carlson's gone, Couture is hurt. I don't know how long for, and then Hurdle. So it's really, I think, between like Duclair, Granlund, Barabanov, and Hurdle are going to be your probable points leaders. I'm picking Barabanov. I think he's going to run with it. I think he's going to be healthy, and I also think he's going to be a good addition for a playoff
team. Okay.
I'm picking with it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I talked about, Hurdle. I think it's going to be a bounce back season for Hurdle. So I expect him to lead the Sharks in goals and assists and in points and just be that guy.
Yeah, and that would be awesome. I do love Thomas Hurdle. So hopefully he is healthy and he is ready to be that guy for the Sharks. I'm going with Barabanov. And then he has like a first round pick draft value. No, I'm kidding.
No.
He's probably going to be, I'm going to say like second and like an AHL is what he's going to get.
If you get a second, I think you're
feeling
thrilled
good
with that. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. What do we got next?
Okay. So this one is pretty bold, I think, actually, even though I like the player a lot. It's a Henry Thrun one. We talked about Henry Thrun earlier. So I'm going to predict, and again, this is just a feel thing, that Thrun doesn't play a regular season game with the Barracuda this season, meaning that he's so good with the Sharks that they're going to keep him up. And a couple of things that do support it, even though we predicted that Thrun would get sent down because of the numbers game, right? But this was before the regular season started, so I'm predicting that Thrun will be good enough once he hits the regular season that the team just can't send them down, kind of. And so so a part of what I would add to it is that we know that David Quinn loves Henry Thrun, you know, has been highly complimentary of him at any, you know, and you know, real compliment, again, not coaches speak. And Henry also is, you know, he seems to have the right mindset, you know, he's always seems composed. He's been a leader everywhere that he's played, captain of Harvard last year, right? And he also has made clear improvements to his game from last year, where he already was pretty good, though granted, you know, end of the season hockey, depleted Sharks team, so it wasn't that as hard for him to make an impression. But I think that Henry is going to hit the ground running here. And, you know, there is a reason why, you know, in all my summer roster predictions before they added Emberson, and I think maybe even before they added Root, I'm not sure. But anyway, I had Thrun making the team. And because I like, you know, I like his game that much. And I like, too, his progress, too. And that's, you know, that's what's important. You know, the Henry Thrun from last year, yeah, you can push him out with a Jan Ruda. You can push him out with maybe even a Radim Šimek, all those kind of guys, right? But I think that Henry's going to show once the regular season starts that he really deserves to be here. And so I do have the caveat of regular season, because once the Sharks, you know, miss the playoffs like we predict, hopefully the Barracuda are in the playoffs, and so they can send Henry down for that. But I believe though that Henry will be good enough to essentially to stay with the Sharks all year.
So who do you think they end up just kind of like waving or people are injured kind of thing to?
Yeah, you know, that's hard to say, you know. I predicted previously that Schimmick and McDonald would hit waivers eventually this year. You know, who loses, it's hard to say. You know, there could be injuries, right? I'm going to assume that there's going to be some injuries along the way, like long-term ones that will help Henry's case to stay, you know? The only two guys that, like, I can kind of see the writing on the wall for in terms of their contracts or being waived are the two names that I mentioned. The other guys, it's hard to say. It's hard to say, you know, so, yeah.
Speaking of rookies, this isn't really a bold prediction until you
not very bold at all. Very disappointing, yeah.
Well, no. You analyze it a little bit further. Eklund is going to put up over 40 points this year. And the people are going to go, ooh, 40 points. There are two Sharks players in the last 23 years who have put up more than 40 points in their draft plus 3 year. Mm-hmm. Two. So do you know those?
Who are they?
Hurdle and Milan Mihalik. So okay. Couture and Meyer both were close. I think they were in the 30s in their draft plus 3 year. So even though it doesn't seem that bold,
so basically they're 20-year-old seasons.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So Mihalik had a fantastic, I think he had like 60 points in his draft plus 3 years,
right.
66. And then Thomas Hurdle had that 46, points in his draft plus 3 years. So,
right.
You know, it's bold in that it hasn't happened a lot for the Sharks. And also sure. It's just not very common for younger players like this to reach that point. But I think
Marlo Sharks, didn't do it.
Well, I said last 20 years. Like,
Marlo's, oh, I'm
like,
sorry. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
He's way before that. Yeah, because he came in and I'm pretty sure he had like 40 points in his first year, I think.
No, he was like in the 20s, but he was, maybe, you know, a mature second. Kind of. Yeah. So, okay.
But other than that, so I'm going to say that Eklund puts up 40 points. I think he's going to get a lot of power play time, a lot of ice time.
I think
his game is progressing, and they seem to have found a lineup spot for him. And obviously, this goes without saying, I don't think he's going to go back to the Barracuda. I think this is going to be his spot, unless it's like tune-up games or whatever.
Actually, I agree on both points. I think that Eklund will clear 40 points, also too that I think he's seen the last of the Barracuda, unless it's the playoffs or some kind of rehab game or whatever. Sure. You know, all summer I predicted Eklund on the roster, just for this reason, because, and like I mentioned, that, you know, there is a clear B game. There is more consistency. Not to say that he's like, you know, a veteran's consistency. He's not Couture yet, but there's a lot more than you would expect for a 20-year-old that will keep him in the lineup and give him chances to let the skill shine.
Yeah, I love Eklund. It's going to be a great season for him. Hopefully he doesn't get too beat down about if there's a bunch of losses. I imagine he won't. But,
well, that's a question with the entire team. So yes. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sometimes you worry about that when you're bringing up.
What about me, Keegan? I get beat down with the losses too.
You have to do this every night.
Yeah.
You have to ask the questions.
Exactly.
Every
night
about the losses.
I don't get days off. I don't get injured, so I can sit out for 2 months.
But are you going to put up 40 points? Is the thing.
I'll put out not 40 points, 40 but 40 40 posts. 40 posts. 40 in a month, so or two weeks.
You need a break. You need injury reserve. Yeah. Speaking of, you put out a call for Sharks writers.
Yes.
I saw.
Yes, so and that's still going. It's on the website, so just look for the requirements. I'm not gonna explain everything that I put in the story, because that's part of part of the test, reading comprehension and not making your busy editor-in-chief explain everything to you. So it's all there on the website. I'm, you know, in terms of just what I'm looking to hire, it's kind of a floating thing because I'm pretty busy with the start of season. But, you know, hopefully by, say, you know, the beginning of November, I'm kind of set with a new group of writers. And so, yeah, thank you for letting me mention it. And the email to reach is also on that story. So test number one, find that email. It's not that hard. So.
Yeah, and you have to listen to 1 hour and 8 minutes into the podcast. Anyway.
Hopefully, the prospective writers are smart enough to just have already gone to an article and not waited 1 hour and 8 for an answer that is already right in their face.
Yeah, probably so. All right, we got our last predictions. These are not too bold, but they're interesting, I think, and then we should get out of here.
And they're also not like kind of hard things that you can kind of hold us to. You know, I mean, most of these predictions are, you know, are numbers or rankings things. So you can, you know, laugh at us when, you know, Zadina is a 10 goal scorer again, or laugh at me when the Sharks are the worst team in the league and, you know, going to have 55 points.
They wave Kaapo Kähkönen because he's
right, exactly. Moment. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So all these have kind of a hard kind of numbers that, you know, hard target. You know, you know, to quote that excellent Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. So, but anyway, though, so these are bonus predictions, right? Bonus bold predictions. They don't have any numbers around them, but sure. Mine is that Mario Ferraro will kind of repair his rep this year. I think that Mario's gonna not worry so much about, you know, trying to be like a two-way, you know, try to be a 30-point power play guy. You know, they tried him there, right, in the past years, right? I think they thought maybe he can do that or he could get to that point. And I think he's just going to focus on playing defense, and he's going to do a better job. But we know that Mario plays this frenetic, you know, does too much kind of style, which is a bad fit for a bad team, because when your team is bad, then you're going to take it upon yourself to try to do too much, which is what he has done, I think, the last couple of years. I think he's gonna kind of pull the reins back enough. So I think that, and again, I'm not saying we're going to see this in the stats. He's not going to score a lot of points. You know, I'm not saying that his, you know, his Jay Fresh card is going to look a lot better. But I think in general, though, there's going to be a sense that his game has matured this year and that it's, you know, progressing once again, whereas you can argue that maybe it's plateaued or gone backward the last couple of years.
I'd be interested to see who's his, like, partner that they stick with, you know?
We'll see.
The guy that, like, kind of, you know, by the middle of, like, December, who's he really sticking with? Is it going to be, like, Ruto, or is it going to be Benning kind of thing?
Right now it's Burrows. They're going to try him out with Burrows, I think, tomorrow. So, but yeah, or it could even be Emberson, right? So that's one thing the Sharks have done a nice job of, is having a set of right-handers there that, you know, that you feel okay with, at least are NHL caliber, you know, probably at least. And so there could be that mix, because Merrill has played a lot of on his offside too, which I think has been a challenge for him too. So I think that that's going to help him too, just to have that consistency of knowing that chances are he's going to have a experienced, not in the case of Emberson, but, you know, somebody who is used to playing the right side, at least on a nightly basis.
Yeah. And not so, chaotic as like Burns or Carlson either to really pair with. We'll see. He could really steady out if he has like a really steady defensive partner with him. Not that Benning or you know, Burrows or Ruda are like all world beaters defensively, but maybe a little less chaotic than Burns and Carlson. Anyway, my prediction is about Emberson. I think Emberson by the end of the year is going to cement himself into the lineup. I think he's
I like that.
Above probably, I don't know who it's going to be, but probably somebody like Burrows, I think, in terms of getting into that sixth D kind of spot. Maybe you get like stepped into like the top four occasionally kind of thing. I really like him. I mean, I haven't seen too much of him, and obviously this could change if I keep watching him and I see lots that stick out that are bad, and then I've, you know, this bold prediction is nothing. But I think it's also very telling, and this is something that I've noticed from my career and the staff, is like when they target a guy, they really they have a reason for it, and they really like him, and they give him a chance to succeed.
Yeah.
And they don't just kind of like find it for whatever or for kicks and then just go, maybe it'll work. Like, they didn't claim Ty Smith. They didn't claim, like, Lassie Thompson. They, like, found a dude that they were like, there's something maybe there about him.
Right, and they found a dude that it felt like they had a lot of already, right? Which is why everyone thought that, I thought that maybe Ty Smith, right? And even, I don't know, Lassie's game, is Lassie Thompson more of an offensive guy too?
Not really.
But still, though, like, you know, they picked, like, you know, kind of a defensive
But he was right-handed. Lassie is right-handed.
Oh, that's true. Okay, and then so is Emberson. But still, like, that they had a lot of, you know. So so it doesn't really occur to you that even if they kind of like him, that, you know, like, do they need another like, at best, Jan Rutta, right? You know, if Ty hits. But they liked him, right? And so that is a good point that, like, you know, they certainly didn't have to claim him, and there's certainly, you know, bigger names, right, that they could have claimed, four more first round picks that they could have claimed, and instead they went with Emberson.
Yeah, so I think by the end of the year, especially if they do move some people out, that he's
how does this clear out then to you, then the roster, like, do you like my Thrun prediction, or do you think he gets sent down just because, you know, of the numbers?
I really want him to stay up. I don't know. I honestly think that by the end of the year, there's going to be somebody who's, like, sitting regularly. And it could be Emberson, but it could also be somebody like Burroughs.
But
probably not Rutta because he's older.
Yeah.
Not
Bennett. I'm asking you, though, because, because if you have Emberson as, like, kind of a nightly guy, a guy who doesn't get sat, right? And let's say Thrun. Okay, that's what I'm wondering.
I think Thrun might go
down,
and then, it's either Thrun goes down or Burroughs is kind of he's 1 year, or he's 3 years, $1 million. You know, he's going to be here for a while, but I don't think they're kind of thinking of he's going to be in this 6-7 role, I think. So, we'll see.
Well, they're giving him a shot at Ferraro, though, but we'll see, though. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So I think maybe Thrun goes down, just based on the numbers aspect.
Okay.
That's kind of what it is. And maybe they trade somebody, too, is kind of
a thing. Sure.
If they
wave a couple guys, they trade somebody, right? Or guys get hurt.
The only one that really has trade value is I guess Ferraro, but I don't know about that.
No, and Rutta has some. He's pricey though. 2 years, as 1 year he would have value. Actually, I don't think they'll trade him. But Benning and Burroughs have value just because even though they're on long contracts, they're so low that you can bury them in its entirety. And Benning is a guy that for sure, like if they just auction him off to the highest bidder. I don't think they'll get a lot, but they would get something back for him, like a fourth round, third round pick, just because, he may not be the top four defenseman that the Sharks use him as because they don't really have a choice. But Matt Bain is, I think, a very good defenseman and, very good on a playoff team. He's a good bottom pairing defenseman, not just a guy you put in there because of cap or whatever, right? Like, you squeeze a guy in there.
He can, he's defensively responsible.
And he competes hard. He's a leader. Like, people laugh at him being on the power play, but the fact that he's able to kind of moonlight as that and, like, he put up some points last year, right? Like, the fact that he's able to even do a facsimile of that, right? Like, that's a guy that has a little more to his game than just, like, defense. You know, look at actually his career. He played the power play with McDavid for a couple of years there. He actually was kind of a regular, Not to say that that was the best Oilers power play. I don't think those Oilers teams made the playoffs. But, like, there is a little more there than just a pure, like, he's not an exceptional offensive player. It may not even be above average, but he's not. But, like,
I think he gets a bad rap because people expected more from him.
It's not even that they expect more. It's just that he's put in places, right? They put him on a power play. And that kind of makes him look bad because, ideally he's not your PP2 quarterback, right? But can he kind of do it and, like, look better than Vlasic, Ferraro, and all those other guys? He did last year. He looked better, I would say, than those guys, at least, would have been in those positions, at least last year, right? And so if he's kind of like a above average defensively and, like, say, slightly below average offensively compared to, say, a Ferraro who is, you know, like, clearly below average offensively, at least at this point, right? That's, you know, that's not bad. That's a player that teams can use. So so anyway, in terms of trade value, going back to that, so
Benning, Ruta.
Yeah, I think Benning has value. I think Benning actually probably has arguably the highest value. Maybe Ferraro, just because Ferraro is younger and has that whole leadership and that whole, you know, like, great locker. Not that Benning isn't those things, but, like, you know, Ferraro is a huge locker room guy. But I actually would say that there's a chance. I know that there was talk last year that teams made pretty like a team made a pretty good offer for Ferraro, but I would say that Benning might actually, if you were to put all of them available for trade right now, and let's not count Thrun because, you know, Thrun is unproved. Like, Thrun would probably get the most because Thrun, you know, he's the prospect of the bunch, right? But of the veteran guys, that I actually would argue that Benning might get the best sort of return. I mean, that wouldn't be like a huge return, but the best of this bunch. Actually, I might say that. Yeah, because again, Ruta might be liked better around the league, but his contract, you know, 2 years at a higher ticket is you know, contracts play a part of it. But yeah, anyway.
So I think ultimately, something happens, and then Emberson kind of gets into the lineup that way, is kind of my prediction. By the end of the year, he's more of like a consistent lineup guy rather than being what we think is going to be scratched for the first game.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. It is okay. This is the day before the Sharks opening night.
Yep.
May come out tonight, might come out tomorrow. Yeah. We'll see, but hope you guys have a good week, and we will report back next week with some Sharks game results as well. Real excited. Take care, right, guys. Bye.